Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Hello, hello one. Hello, hello all. My name is Russell Hebbets, and welcome to another episode of Is This Legal? I am here with my co-host and partner in crime, Colin McCallan.
Hello.
And today we're going to be taking you to a case that is going on right now in Arizona. It's going on in Maricopa County, a suburb of Phoenix. And we're going to be talking about the really, really, really tragic death of a young teenager named Preston Lord. Preston was 15 years old, and this past year in 2023, he was at a Halloween party with a lot of people, and something got out of control at that party, and there ended up being a fight where Preston Lord was assaulted and beaten by a number of other teenagers and young men, and sent him to the hospital, and tragically, a couple days later, Preston passed away from his injuries from that beating.
That's right. This is actually a listener-inspired episode. This was a suggestion from one of our faithful listeners, specifically my dad. So wow. Thank you, Dan McCallan, for shining a light on this one. It's a very interesting topic. And Russ, we're going to talk about an organization that might be related to this called the Gilbert Goons, which is that's the big kind of gang that some of these kids may be associated with. So we're going to be talking about kind of youth violence as it was going on in this suburb. So there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about, so right now, 7 young men, and they range in age from 17 to 19. So you do have some people who are under the age of 20 or 18, so right, not adults yet, but all 7 of the people charged right now have been charged as adults, and they are all, as Colin said, at least loosely associated together, and the kind of local media has dubbed them the Gilbert Goons.
That's right.
You know, let's kind of dive into this, because this is breaking right now. These people, these young men, just got charged within the past couple days, even though this happened back in October. And we'll also talk about that delay in law enforcement. But let's start off with talking about who these guys are, Colin, and what this group is, and kind of how we got to where we are today.
Sure. Well, Russ, unlike George Lucas would do, why don't we start at the beginning?
Like starting in the middle worked really well for him. I mean, those were his best ones.
That's true.
We probably should start in the middle.
Well, let's start talking about the Gilbert Goons really quickly and how we got to this death in around Halloween of 2023. So, law enforcement and honestly, this Maricopa County community started noticing an uptick of assault cases somewhere around November of 2022. So this goes back almost a couple years. And a pattern started emerging where basically the police started investigating a string of assaults. And there was kind of a similar MO where people were randomly getting assaulted outside of public places. One person got assaulted outside of an In-N-Out Burger. One person got assaulted outside of a parking garage. Things like that. In all of these assaults, there were multiple youth assailants, very young in age, around 17, 18, 19 years old. They would do kind of mass attacks with multiple people, and often they would be filming these attacks, someone would be with a cell phone, possibly for posting later. And so they noticed that some of the perpetrators, and this ended up created, there was a task force created by the police agency that looking into this, they start coming across patterns, like some of these guys actually know each other. And they start building basically a database to show these guys are actually acting in concert. So Up until October of 2023, though, no one had died. These were, you know, basically assaults where, you know, the victim survived. But everything culminated with the death of this 15-year-old boy, Preston Lord.
Well, the fact that they have been working, there's evidence, at least, that they have been working in concert in the past. That is what gets us to that kind of gang language,
right?
Because that is very relevant. You know, if you have just random one-off acts of violence, yeah, those are assaults. Those can be felonies, but you don't have that gang association. And later on, we're going to talk about that because that is significant. If that is proven, that is going to be an enhancer. That's going to lead to more significant or more severe potential repercussions.
Right. So, you know, coming back to October, or late October 2023, Preston Lord goes to a party, and he is eventually targeted and beaten by, again, at least seven individuals were involved in this assault. It could be more.
Yeah, I saw one report there were potentially up 10 to 15 potential assailants. Like, this is a big group of people jumping this kid, and it was over something. We don't have details, but I saw it was over like a $10 gold chain,
right?
That got
a stolen
taken.
Necklace or something, yeah. that maybe was taken from a friend or something,
right?
It was something really, really silly, obviously.
Really stupid.
And you know, the tragic thing about this, Russ, is, you know, first of all, by the police reports that we have, and there's not much out there, but the accounts we do have, it looks like some of these perpetrators filmed the attack. This kid didn't die right away, Russ. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks before he finally succumbed to his injuries. So he didn't die the night of the assault. It happened very slowly, unfortunately. And, you know, there's allegations that these guys were, you know, kind of humiliating him and, I don't know, doing things during the assault just to mock him. Really, really ugly stuff.
Very ugly stuff. I mean, it's honestly like kind of, it reminded me when I heard this, it was like kind of Lord of the Flies stuff.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, you just, things start getting rolling and it's just tragic. It's tragic. It's very sad. But let's talk about some of these individual defendants who are now charged very recently. Let's start with the kind of biggest one, this kid named Talon Renner.
Yeah. Talon Renner, by the way, is 17 years old. He is a juvenile. Normally we wouldn't name him, but I can tell you that just about every news outlet that's broken the story has already named him. So we're going to talk about Talon. Russ, can I talk about the name Talon for a second? There are two of the seven people who have been arrested in this case are named Talon. Okay, I don't know. I think I'm hard-pressed to think of a whiter, more suburban name than Talon. And honestly, Russ, like, they didn't even spell it the cool way. Like, an eagle's claw, T-A-L-O-N.
Right.
One of them is T-A-L-A-N, and the other is T-A-L-Y-N.
Yeah.
I mean, what the heck?
If you're going to name someone Talon, you may as well do it like a bird of praise, like killing instrument.
Make it cool. Right. Sorry to anybody named Talon out there, but yeah, I don't know.
We apologize to any Talons listening.
Hey, if your name is Talon, you might be under investigation for this thing, because frankly, the odds are against you. But
that's, I mean,
two out of seven named Talon. Anyway, well, let's talk about Talon Renner, because you're right. The media focus has been on this kid probably for a few interesting reasons, right? What's this kid's background?
So this kid, his parents own, or at least his dad does, own multiple Orange Theory fitness franchises.
Right.
They are, or his dad at least, is very wealthy.
Yeah.
They have lots of means. And right after this happened, the parents, or at least the father, the whole focus of everything I read was the father. I'm not sure about the mother. I'm not sure if she's in the picture. But immediately he started doing some things, like the next day. He went and took Talon to see an attorney, which was smart.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you think there's criminal liability, you should go talk to an attorney.
Absolutely.
So here's what allegedly the attorney told him. The attorney allegedly told him that Talon would get off, and I'm using air quotes there, because of the number of kids involved.
Right. Yeah, you got nothing to worry about, Talon.
Yeah, you're all
good.
We're
going to sweep this under the rug like all your other problems right, that daddy's going to take care of.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that, why an attorney may have said that. But The father then, he actually took Talon out of town. Why'd he do that, Colin?
They apparently own a cabin about 3 hours outside of their home. According the source of this information, by the way, from what I can gather, is coming from two places. Travis Renner is the father. Okay, he's Talon's father. Travis Renner's ex-girlfriend is talking to the media about this. I don't know if she likes Travis very much anymore.
So yeah, wasn't a very amiable breakup.
Maybe not, because the ex-girlfriend is sharing details like they went to a cabin specifically so that Talon could not be contacted by law enforcement, but also so that the hand injuries that he apparently had that were visible cuts, bruises on his hands, i.e. from a beating, dad wanted those to heal before he would be seen publicly. And they did pull him out of school, by the way, so that they could take him to this location.
Well, I'll tell you, that is something that law enforcement is always looking at. From a couple of criminal defense attorneys, anytime there's an assault, detectives will examine the suspect's hands. They will take pictures of the hands.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you hit things, especially when you hit things like hard skulls, your hands leave marks.
That's right.
And well, on your hands, right?
Right. Now, here's something that, Russ, that the Daily Mail is reporting. This is right out of an article that they put out a couple of days ago. There's apparently a former employee of this guy, Travis Renner. Again, this guy, I don't know how beloved he is, Russ, but
everyone's talking
about. I'll just read right from the Mail article. According to the Mail, the former employee at this guy's company said that Travis Renner was openly discussing his plans to hide evidence and shift blame on the other kid named Talon. So convenient in this case that there's another kid named Talon.
Right. So here's a pro tip. You know, don't in the office openly talk about suppressing evidence.
Right.
You know, this is, I don't know why he would have possibly done that, but I don't have any reason to think that his employee is making it up. Maybe he just thought he was untouchable, Colin.
Right.
Right.
And here's what I can tell you, Russ, we're going to cover this later. We're on topic. Might as well talk about it now. You guys remember a couple podcasts ago, we talked about Jennifer Crumley, and she's the woman of Ethan Crumley, who was a mass shooter who was convicted. And Jennifer Crumley was his mom. And she got convicted by a Michigan jury for basically failing to intervene, for failing to do enough to prevent her son from committing this crime. That case is fresh on my mind as I'm looking at Mr. Travis Renner here, Russ. Again, the Daily Mail is also suggesting that he might have hid evidence the night of the crime. He has not yet been charged with anything. Russ, do you think he has anything to worry about?
I mean, you know, given, you know, we talked about this in the Jennifer Crumley case, that was one of a kind, right? That was the first time something like that had happened in that kind of situation, you know, holding a parent responsible directly for something like that, for a death. So I think that this is another step along that path, right?
Yeah.
So I would be concerned if I were him. I certainly would be speaking to an attorney if I were him.
Of course. Honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong, too, with getting his son out of Dodge and putting him in a cabin. And, you know, he has a right to remain silent. He doesn't have to participate in interviews. He has no obligation to do anything with this investigation.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think any of that would be criminal in nature.
No. And I, you know, I keep seeing these news outlets saying he was covering up evidence. I mean, without more detail, I don't see it.
Yeah. I'm not there
rising
either,
to that level,
we'll see.
But you know, going back to you with, you know, did he have a responsibility, to supervise his son better, so his son didn't do something like this? You know, that's an extension of the Crumley case, and that's something we can go into a little bit later, but that's the potential where I think he might have some exposure.
Right. Well, let's get back to Talon. Russ, tell us about kind of the immediate aftermath, what was going on with Talon and maybe extracurricular activities at school.
So at this point, soon after, like, everyone knows about this, right? Everyone knows that there was this fight. Everyone knows that Preston Lord got at least put in the hospital with very serious injuries. And so all of this is swirling around. So within a couple days, the police serve search warrants on Talon. They serve them for his social media accounts, for his phone, and for his DNA. Mm-hmm. So the police are actively investigating and actively investigating Talon, but no charges have been filed yet. So while all this is going on, Talon Renner is apparently a star football player.
Of course he is, with that name.
of course he is.
Probably the quarterback. I
mean, it just fits into Talon. this kind of stereotype that we're building here. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's more to him than this.
Yeah, we're going with the stereotype because why not?
We are, right. It just fits too perfectly. So he's a star football player. People know about this and they don't care, right? Mm-hmm. They say, hey, we have a big game coming up. You know, they're playing this football game. We want our star football player to play. And he does play. And in fact, Colin, what does he get?
He won the Player of the Game
Award.
Player
of the Game Award.
Now, this is after, let's be clear about this. This is after he had been served with search warrants.
Right.
But before he had been charged or arrested with anything.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
So let's talk about that for a second. There's some aftermath here. The school ended up firing the football coach.
Yeah.
I assume because they let this kid play.
Right.
And Russ, do you think that was the right call under the circumstances?
So there's a couple different ways to look at this. You know, as defense attorneys, you know, as a defense attorney, I'm looking at this saying at the time he played, he was under investigation. He knew he was under investigation, but he hadn't been charged with anything.
Right.
Even if he had been charged with anything, he hasn't been convicted of anything. You know, he hasn't been proven guilty of anything. And we're not even to the spot where there's probable cause, right? He's a suspect. We know that. So should someone who's just a suspect of a crime, hasn't even been charged, be required to, you know, just change their whole life?
Right.
And, you know, there's from a legal perspective, absolutely not, is my answer.
You keyed on the exact phrase, from a legal perspective. And Russ, for what it's worth, I agree with everything you said. This guy had not had his day in court. He hadn't even been charged with a crime yet. Why should his life be disrupted in any way? Now, that's one way to look at it.
Right.
The other way to look at it is how everybody else is looking at it, which is just kind of the general optics of the situation.
Right.
And I mean, honestly, you like, if you're the school or the coach, you know that your star player has been served with a search warrant for his phone related to the death of a kid, a 15-year-old kid. Maybe there are things you can do. Maybe, okay, you can go to the game, but we're not going to play you.
Right.
We're not going to suspend you. We're not going to take any action. But, you know, Talon, maybe it's not a great look for you to go out and lead the team. Yeah.
Maybe you should
under these circumstances.
right. Maybe you should make an excuse and say, like, yeah, I'm sick and can't play. Maybe you don't name him player of the game.
Right. I mean, geez.
You know, and at the time, the school released some statement to that effect, like, beforehand, like, well, we weren't aware of any charges, so we let him play. But after all of this just public outrage this, then, I mean,
it's that white privilege stereotype that we're talking about right now that pissed so many people off.
Right.
Like, this could, and honestly, Russ, this might be a good segue to talk about the delay in this investigation. You know, we're one of the things we talked about at the beginning of the show was that it's taken the police. This happened October 28th, 2023, the assault on Preston Lord. I think it was March 7th was the first arrest that was made for any of these seven people who have been charged so far. Russ, that is a significant amount of time. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so there's two kind of positions on this. Like, we know that the police were investigating it right away. Like, they were serving warrants on these kids within a couple days of this death. I think of the fight. I'm not sure of the fight or of the death, but regardless, they were investigating it actively from the very start. So
small police agency too. I feel like it's worth mentioning. I can't remember the Queen. It's not a big metropolitan police jurisdiction.
Yeah.
I'll find it in a minute, but
yeah, whoever it was, I mean, they were on it immediately.
Queen Creek Police.
Queen Creek.
Right.
Okay.
That's who's handling this.
Yeah. So they're doing that. They're collecting information and they're getting evidence early. In fact, let me just interject a couple of the kind of bombshell things they got very quickly from those warrants. Talon Renner,
the guy we've been talking about,
made a Snapchat post that said, "I got in a fight, a big group fight, and I accidentally killed a kid. I guess I'm just too strong."
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the just callousness of that last sentence just resonates. That's his takeaway from that. Right. His takeaway is, "I'm just too strong."
Yeah. Well, there was another kid. This is all being reported. And again, we're unclear how accurate any of this is, but one of the kids who was involved in this, I think his name was Tresty.
Yeah, Treston Billy.
Treston, pardon me.
They call him Tresty.
Tresty.
Yeah, good old Tresty.
Good old Tresty. Well, good old Tresty allegedly may have been the last person to strike Preston Lord, although it might have been very significant. He might have stomped on his head, Russ,
right?
Because he was apparently asked about that later at a party and maybe talked about it.
Yeah.
So again, these kids, as you can imagine, these are young kids who are about to face more trouble than they could ever imagine in their lives. You know, they don't use their heads. They're talking about this.
No.
This is in the context of a high school situation here.
And they're texting about it. Like that Snapchat, that one went away. The police found a witness who testified that he made that snap. But there's a text that they have from Talon Renner saying, "I might have hospitalized that kid. I hit him pretty hard."
Man.
So that's a text to a co-defendant. Right. So there's evidence here. So the police are here with a bunch of evidence and they're not making arrests.
Right.
So, okay, on one side,
yeah,
Colin, on one side, this is a chaotic situation. There, by some accounts, are up to 15 different people involved. They need to not just get arrests, but build cases.
Right. You're kind of talking about why this might have taken so
right.
long with a police department that's working hard and in good faith.
Right.
I mean, another thing too, you're talking about a chaotic situation. You've got possibly seven or more defendants. Look, I guarantee you that they all didn't engage in the exact same activity. I mean, we don't have specifics on that. For all we know, a couple of these people might be bystanders. And you know, it's going to take the police time to kind of sort these people out and figure out who they're going to go after and what evidence they have to support the charges.
And it makes sense that they need time to build a case, especially if it's going to be a case that stands up in court. Now the argument that everyone in the community is just howling about,
right,
and maybe rightfully so, is they had all this evidence. They got all this stuff quick. They got these statements saying, "I hit him pretty hard. I may have actually killed a kid." They have them talking. They have these seven at least talking about deleting photos. They started a private group chat. They bought burner phones, allegedly, these seven, like within days. Those are not actions of innocent parties.
Right.
And, you know, you
could have arrest come sooner.
Yeah. Right. So,
well, and of course, going along with what we've been saying, is it possible that like these white kids who are being looked at by law enforcement, I don't know, maybe attorneys got involved to slow things down. I don't know. That's what people are wondering. I mean, there was a lot of pressure felt by this police agency to make some decisions in this case. But it's I think, honestly, it's hard for us to say at this point.
Right.
I mean, really, like, we've just kind of covered both sides of it. I tend to think the police just really wanted to do a thorough investigation. They knew what a serious case this was, and they wanted to make sure they had their ducks in a row.
Yeah.
But, 5 months. That's
it's a long time. At this point, I feel like you're right. We don't have enough information to say if, like, that was a true lapse by the police or if they really needed that much time. I'll tell you something interesting that I came across, Colin, which is just... It's hard for me to believe that this is the state of Arizona law, but apparently it is. So there's a law that says essentially informants cannot have their names redacted from public filings. So you have other kids who were at the party who came forward to the police and said, "Hey, here's what I saw.
Right.
Here's who did what and when, and I'm helping you with your investigation." These kids ended up, now I understand, like, they identified themselves and that gives credibility to their statements and that makes it more likely that you're going to be able to use that information, but their names were then released on public filings that anyone could see. And some of these kids faced, you know, at least some sort of harassment for essentially being snitches
or reprisal, right? You know, in the future, who knows? But yeah, so you're saying Arizona has a law that basically says the identity of those people can't be redacted,
right?
That's pretty. So what Russ is referring to, like in Colorado, if a district attorney's bringing charges against someone and they've got witnesses that they're worried about, they can file a motion with a court saying, hey, we want to redact all of the personal information of this witness and not disclose it to the defendant for fear of their safety.
And we occasionally get those types of motions. Now, as a defense attorney, you still get that, right? Because you have to be able to provide a defense.
That's
and you
correct.
Have to know who these people are and do investigation. But there can be orders entered saying, hey, you can't disclose it to your client,
right?
And you can't publicize it at all.
Right.
So I don't understand why Arizona has that law. I saw an interview with the police chief from Queens Creek, and he basically said, we're trying to get that law changed. He was apologizing. He said, you know, I understand this is a problem for these people, but our hands are tied. Like the law says, we have to release those names.
Well, that is pretty interesting. That's weird. Russ, what do you think? This is a great time, I think, to take a break to play a little bit of Is This Legal? And on the other side of the break, we're going to get more into this Gilbert Goons saga. Talk more about this killing, kind of what we think is going to be happening next with the situation.
Yeah, so we'll talk defenses, we'll talk prosecution, strategies. We've got a lot of meat for you still, so don't go anywhere.
All right, be right back. All right, faithful listeners, got one question for you. Are you ready to play Is This Legal? I know I am. Russ, are you?
I know I am too. So we have a good one for you today. So anyone new listening, this is where we give you a fictional legal scenario, mostly involving our friends Jebediah and Cornelius.
Of course.
And their supporting cast.
Yep.
And at the end, we ask you to be the judge. Is it legal? Which way should this come out?
Judge, jury, and sometimes executioner, if you're lucky.
Once in a while.
Yeah.
Although no one's been executed
yet. That's right. Yeah, that would kind of kill
zero,
our segment, wouldn't
zero
it?
Zero executions.
We can't kill any characters off.
So you, in fact, I'm rethinking that.
Judge,
not,
jury.
Yeah. Well, no executioner. We're not going to have any executions. All right. So here we go. Our friend Jebediah, he's in trouble again. His nephew Silas was getting picked on
Silas.
In school.
That's new character.
New
All
character,
right.
Silas. Yep. Make a note, everyone. So Silas was getting picked on in school by the Northamptonshire Borough bully, Jumpin' Jehoshaphat.
Oh, he's back, huh?
He's back. Jebediah had enough and decided to put an end to it by breaking all the windows of Jehoshaphat's moto car.
Okay.
Now, he left a note saying, if you touch Silas again, your moto car won't be the only thing broken.
Oh, okay.
Officer Cornelius did some investigation and put out a warrant for the arrest of Jebediah for felony destruction of property and threats. Now, Jebediah always has his ear to the town grapevine and heard that Cornelius had zeroed in on him. He looked up the charges he was being accused of and saw that there was a 3-year statute of limitation on those charges. He decided that he had enough of Officer Cornelius and Northamptonshire and decided to leave on an extended wagon trip around the world for 3 years and 1 day.
Wow.
After 3 years, he returns from his trip, rested, relaxed with a big smile on his face. He walks right up to Officer Cornelius and asks him if he missed him, whereupon Officer Cornelius promptly arrests him for destruction of property and threats. Now Jebediah protests, saying, sorry, Officer Cornelius, the statute of limitations has run. I am now untouchable. Who is right, people, Jebediah or Cornelius?
That's a good one. Now, first of all, I just have a comment. I find it interesting. So he opted to travel the world for 3 years and a day by wagon.
By the way, he didn't make it very far.
He had his shiny new moto car that we're always talking about. Why didn't he hop in that bad boy?
He loves his wagon.
Yeah, well, you know? Yeah, he does repair wagons. He can, he's really good at it in case it breaks down.
He can repair the wheels.
Literally his job.
Anywhere.
Yeah, okay. All right. So this is a good one, Russ. So, gosh, he just kind of ups and leaves and is like, oh, man, I can beat the rap this yep. way.
Just
he waits out the statute of limitations. So, listener, what do you think? Are these charges sticking, or does he slip away on this one?
What's the answer, Colin?
I'm sorry. Jebediah is screwed on this one.
Yep.
Yeah, so... let's talk about how a statute of limitations works. Okay. A statute of limitations is a thing. I mean, basically, the police do have a certain amount of time to bring charges against someone after the alleged date of offense. Okay. But what happened here is Cornelius finished his investigation. He put out an arrest warrant.
Yep.
That is essentially charging someone.
That's it.
So if you find out you have a warrant, that doesn't mean you can just skip town and kind of wait out the statute of limitations. The statute of limitations isn't running.
That would be a really big loophole, right? Where a lot of people would be getting out of charges. Now, now, if we tweaked it a little bit and said Cornelius was still investigating the case. Right. Jebediah skips town. Cornelius does not complete his investigation. He says, you know what? Before I finish this up, I really want to talk to Jebediah. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years and a day later, Jebediah comes back and Cornelius says, I want to interview you about this case. At that point, he's out of luck because yep. he did not file charges within the statute of limitations. He can no longer do it. The case cannot be filed. It's done.
That's
it's
right.
dead.
Yep. So, yep, Jebediah loses this one. That's a good one, Russ. All right, well, we are going to get back to our regularly scheduled programming. Hope you did well at home. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, everyone. So we are diving back into the really tragic killing of Preston Lord, and we're going to be talking about really kind of more of the legalities at this point. You guys have the baseline, what happened, what the allegations are. So let's talk a little bit about the case itself. So first of all, it's very interesting. You know, 7 co-defendants have been charged. 3 of them are under the age of 18, but all 7, including those 3 17-year-olds, were charged as adults. Now, there are some strategic reasons to do that. First of all, you know, the DA has the option to charge people as adults.
Right.
And it varies from state to state. Sometimes if you're too young, you have to actually file a motion with a judge and get a judge to authorize that, what's called a direct filing. Sometimes if you're close to 18, the DAs can make that election. But in this case, however it happened, all 7 charged as adults.
And I feel like that's a no-brainer for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's super serious crime.
Right.
Second of all, you got other co-defendants who are over the age of 18. So in the interest of equity, you want to make sure you're treating people the same. I mean, the juvenile penalties versus the adult penalties are extremely disparate.
Yeah. And third, they're very close to 18.
Right.
You're not talking about 15-year-olds,
exactly.
14-year-olds, even 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, these are very close to 18, so it makes sense. All 7 charged as adults. So they're all also, Colin, they're all charged with first-degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is the most serious charge. That's the highest felony in the state of Arizona, really in any state.
Right.
First-degree murder. So, you know, this is as serious as it gets. Why would they charge everyone with first-degree murder if... like that lawyer earlier told Tellen Renner, you know, there were so many kids involved, I'm going to be able to get you off.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they charge everyone with first degree murder?
Leverage, Russ. That's why. Let's break this down a little bit. So interesting. Let's talk about first degree murder as it pertains to Arizona. Okay. Every state has a first degree murder statute. Sometimes it varies. In Arizona, they do have to prove premeditation,
Russ, right.
Which is super interesting. They have to prove that at least one of these actors, if not all of them, set out to kill Preston Lord, that was their intention. Now, Russ, based on what we know about this, as ugly as this case is, to me, that's a stretch. I'm not sure these kids wanted to kill this kid.
Yeah, that. So they have to premeditation and intent. So, I mean, you touched on both of those. So they had the intent to kill him, and that intent was formed ahead of time. Like, right. that is a high bar.
Right.
That is a high bar to hit. Now, second degree murder, which is what's called a lesser included offense. So, like, if this went to trial, the jury probably would get to choose between first degree murder and second,
right,
or not guilty.
Right.
Second degree murder is much easier in Arizona.
Easier to prove.
Yeah. Right. Second degree murder in Arizona means you cause death without premeditation. So you don't have to have planned it ahead of time. And it could be as simple as engaging in conduct manifesting extreme indifference to human life.
Right.
That would clearly fit these allegations, like, yeah, easily.
So coming back to why would the prosecutor charge maybe something that's a little bit of a stretch. Honestly, Russ, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, a couple things there. I mentioned leverage, okay? First of all, you've got seven kids here, young kids, some of them juveniles, who are staring at a life sentence, potentially.
Life without parole and a possibility of the death sentence in, right, Arizona.
Okay.
That's what they're looking at.
So you, as a prosecutor, are almost counting on these guys to start turning on each other. All right. You're going to count on them coming forward and saying, hey, I'm going to save my own neck and tell you what really, really happened here. And honestly, like you mentioned, the prosecutor can bring a first degree murder trial and let the jury elect whether or not this was a premeditated death versus a second degree murder, which would not require the premeditation. Either way, you know, they're going to get a really stiff conviction if they get either one of those, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just for people out there, second degree murder in Arizona has a mandatory 10 to 22 years is what you're looking at. So minimum 10 years, can't be less than 10. No good time on that, by the way.
Okay.
So you have to serve the entire time, up to 22 years. And we'll talk a little bit about the gang stuff, but the gang stuff could increase that. But what you just mentioned, you know, it's for leverage, trying to get kids to flip. We're already seeing some evidence of that, Colin.
We are.
Like,
we're about to see some DCOTW stuff here, Russ. Let's tell them about it.
I mean, one of these dipshits, I mean, I don't know what other word to say. And I believe it was good old Trusty who, yeah, under some evidence, was the last one to...
The stomper.
Yeah. He apparently, his mom said...
Alleged stomper.
Right. All of this is alleged, right? And we don't even know for sure this is... That this could be wrong, but what's in the media right now, right, is that he said his mom wants a piece of that $10,000 reward because there was a $10,000 reward, yeah, for information on this case.
That's right, Russ. This guy is texting with one of his co-defendants, basically saying, you know what, if I provide the video of the assault of Preston Lord to the police, maybe I'll get $10,000.
I mean, that's going to buy a lot of toothpaste for you, Trusty, when you're in life in prison from the commissary.
I mean, it's honestly, that is the mentality though of a young kid like this. And honestly, that's, I think, going to help the prosecution. These kids were slipping up.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely, cause truly, like, let's go back to what they have to prove. They have to prove, intent to kill. They also are going to have to prove causation to some degree. You know, right, they're going to have to, if one of these kids, you know, just pushed him, it's a weaker case,
right,
than, you know, old Talon Renner, who says he was throwing hammer punches at, right, this kid until, you know, his hands bled or whatever.
Yeah. And Russ isn't just making that up. That's apparently something that he told another witness about, yeah, what happened. He described his punches as hammer punches.
Yeah.
So Russ, you mentioned a minute ago too. I mean, I'll be honest with you, 10 to 20 years, 22 years, assuming any of these kids get convicted, feels a little hollow on a murder charge to me. Is there a possibility that they could get maybe a higher sentence?
So there is, and that's when we get back to the gang enhancer, right? So in Arizona has a statute that basically says if a crime was done as part of gang activity, essentially, then that increases both the minimum and the maximum by for a crime like this, 5 years. Mm-hmm. So that would take it up significantly. That would take it up, you know, to 15 to 27. So that would be higher. The presumptive, by the way, range for a second degree murder is 16 years. So that would take that presumption up to 21. Okay. So, on a case like this, I cannot imagine a judge going under the presumptive.
Now, one interesting thing about this particular gang that we know about, the Gilbert Goons, okay? This is not your traditional gang that you might picture in your mind, okay? First of all, we're talking about these guys operate on the suburbs.
Yeah, white suburban kids.
Right, white suburban kids. You're not talking about inner city. From what I can tell, firearms don't seem to be something these guys at least use when they're perpetrating assaults. You know, they don't seem to have, we don't have a lot of evidence about whether or not the Gilbert Goons specifically have any sort of organization or whether or not they have like maybe tattoos or something that would show right. gang membership. I mean, honestly, in a way it could be, Russ, some of this is kind of a product of just media frenzy of right. just like sensationalism. Like, hey, it's, I mean, it makes it cooler if we can tie this to like the Gilbert Goons. It sounds interesting.
Right.
Although I will say, if that's your name, Gilbert Goons, that's yeah. the best you can come up with like really, is that supposed to like
brings to mind the Goonies?
It like, doesn't bring like, to mind Chub, anything
do
particular.
Your dance. You know, the chubby kid.
Yeah, of course I do. Yeah, my kids are in a huge Goonies phase right now. So yeah, we know that movie well. come up with a better name is the point I'm making, Russ. But you know, we have to see more about whether or not like specific organized gang activity was directly involved in this assault,
right.
or if this was more of just a loose association of people who might have some affiliation with that, we're going to wait and see.
So, you know, we talked about the fact that there were these other assaults, there were uptick in right. youth assaults, that all this stuff that they're trying to tie to them. You know, you and I discussed this earlier. That actually, that information in a perverse way may actually help these kids.
Yep.
Because you have multiple assaults over time. And remember, the DA, to get first-degree murder, has to prove intent.
To kill.
To kill.
Right.
Right? Intent to kill. Now, you have his Talon Renner's Snapchat where he said, I accidentally killed a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That helps him say, I didn't have that intent.
Right.
This was done right after, and clearly I didn't mean it. That's what I texted. You have all of these other assaults where no one died, right?
Right. These aren't homicides. These are assaults that their intention was to beat people up because whatever their motivation was, but it seems clear it wasn't to kill. You're right. So I think, you know, in a way, them showing, look, we just wanted to mess this kid up a little bit. This ended up being tragic.
Yeah. Now the flip side of that is if you just want to mess a kid up a little bit, you don't stomp on his head.
Damn right.
You don't keep throwing punches until this kid is prone on the floor, not moving, and your hands are bleeding.
Right. And I'm sorry. I mean, there's also too bad, so sad. I don't care what your intention was. We know what the result was. And that result is going to have direct consequences for you no matter what.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a tough argument to say. We just wanted to mess this kid up, not kill him. Well, guess what? You killed him. So,
yeah, it's a tough one. You know, it's a tough one. It'll be interesting. You know, Colin and I normally, we make predictions. On a case like this, we just really don't have quite enough information to do that. You know, we may come back to this when the case is going to trial. That's when we oftentimes try to drop these podcasts so that you guys can just look and see, like, within a day or
right.
two, what's the jury verdict? Were
right.
they right? Were they wrong?
Right,
what
right.
happened?
We're going to sit back and wait on this one. I guess I'll make a couple predictions over us, at least one. I don't think all seven of these guys are going down for first degree murder. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if this case gets boiled down to like a concentration of one or two, maybe three principal actors where the other guys kind of walk away with a lot less than like a murder conviction.
Right. I would agree to that. And that's going to make it stronger, especially I think that they will get people who will agree to testify in exchange for a plea agreement. And really, that's what that's what the DAs want to do. They want to hold the people truly responsible for the death. So if you have a kick to the head, if you have multiple punches after it's clear that there's no defense, like those are the people that they're going to be focusing this prosecution on. So I think that's a good prediction. I think that's likely. But we'll see as we go on.
We will. So this is a pretty fascinating one. Thanks again, Dad, for showing us this one. That's a really good one. And I'm sure we'll probably have more follow up on it. But some heavy stuff for us. I think we need to maybe lighten the mood a little bit.
I think we can't leave people with that. Let's leave people with a dumb, dumb criminal.
I think that's a great idea. It is time for...
D-C-O-T-W, the Dumb Criminal of the Week.
That is right, Russ. It is my turn today. Geographically, that's a tough word. We're going to Beaver Creek, Ohio. I'm familiar with Beaver Creek, Colorado. I didn't know there was a Beaver Creek, Ohio. Hello to our Beaver Creek listeners. Here it is, our DCOTW. Is a 39-year-old man named Robert Strank. Mr. Strank walks into the Huntington Bank and approached a teller. Right after he approaches the teller, Russ, he immediately becomes ill and asks the teller to call 911. My gosh. He then faints right there in the bank, Russ. Now, as he's coming to, and while the paramedics were on their way, he gives a note to the teller demanding cash from the till. The teller politely said no and made her second call to 911, this time asking for the police. And Mr. Strank was treated by medics at the scene and then handed over to police, who arrested him promptly for attempted bank robbery. Unfortunately for Mr. Strank, Russ, he had two prior bank robbery convictions. So there you go, man. That's our DCOTW of the day. What do you think about that?
And that's absurd. There's so many absurd parts to that story. I mean, we keep giving out fives, and we just I'm going to give another five. But I mean, before we get there, I mean,
well, first of all, I think we know that bank robbery, Russ, is not for the faint of heart.
I mean, Colin, you snooze, you lose.
You know, this guy's charged with robbing a bank, Russ, but one thing I don't think he's guilty of is resisting arrest.
Arrest. I like what you did there.
Your Honor, 1 minute I'm passing notes, the next minute I'm passing out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, okay. So I think you were saying about fives, Russ.
Yeah, I mean, like this this very...
You already said dipshit. I know. You might as well use it again.
Right. This second dipshit of this episode. First, he calls 911 on himself before he even starts.
I think the teller...
Tells the teller to call 911, you said.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that counts. Mind. Like, you don't want any emergency responders to your bank robbery. I don't care if it's police or EMTs.
Right. What's your getaway plan?
Right.
I got news for you, buddy. It's not the ambulance. You're right.
It's not taking you. And then after he's on the floor, that's when, like, you could have gotten away. You could have just aborted. Yeah, abort.
Okay, abort. I'm having an episode here. Maybe we should try this tomorrow.
right. Maybe a different bank. Maybe.
So, yeah, Russ, I couldn't agree more. I'm handing out a five. I don't even need any discussion. Listeners, this is where we rank the stupidity of our offender using our 1 to 5 knucklehead. Or this is a fiver for me.
Mr. Strank, more like Mr. Stank.
I take it that's a five for you as well.
Yeah, five for me as well.
Awesome. Perfect 10 for Mr. Stank. Nice work, man. So that is going to do it for us. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. As I mentioned this a couple times, this is a listener-inspired episode. We love to hear suggestions from our listeners. If you've got a case going on that we should be paying attention to, please get in touch with us in a number of ways. You can email us at denvercrimelaw, all one word, at gmail.com. How else, Russ?
You can find us on Facebook at Hebbes McCallan. You can find us on X at Is This Legal Pod. So reach out. Let us know what's going on. Give us some feedback. We've gotten some feedback just without, you know, any requests from some listeners. We love to hear it. Yep. If you have something that you think could be improved, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for listening as always, and we will see you next time right here on Is This Legal?
Johnny Law looked at me. Said, Jebediah, can't you see them things you're doing just ain't right? Going around this town, stirring up a fright. Won't get far driving in your motor car. Look Cornelius right in the eye. Said you ain't got proof. I ain't the guy. Said I may not wear no crown upon my head. I may not be regal. Tell me one thing, Cornelius, my friend. Is it legal?